Okay, this week's parasha is Parashas Kisisa, page 44, Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, the beginning of the parasha. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemar, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Kisisa esroish b'nei Yisrael lefkudehem, when you take account of the heads of the Jewish people, lefkudehem, to their numbers, v'nasnu ishkaifa nafshir l'Hashem b'fkaydoisam, and each person shall give an atonement for his soul to God when he counts them. There shall not be a plague when they are counted. This is what they shall give. All who pass through the numbers. They give a half shekel of the holy shekel. So the Torah is telling us that when the Jewish people are to be counted, each person has to give something as an atonement for himself. And what is that? Ze yitnu. This is what they shall give. And what is that? A half shekel. Now, whenever the Torah says the word ze, this, it typically means that something is actually being pointed to. Ze, this. There's something specific that was being referred to or pointed to by the word ze. So the Midrashic interpretation of the Medrash Tanchuma says the following. Amar Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir stated, something that looked like a coin of fire, God took out from under his holy throne. The Her'ol Moshe, he showed it to Moshe. And he said to him, Zayitnu, this is what they shall give. Kazayitnu, like this they shall give. Little translation is, this is what they will give, this is the amount that they will give. But the word zeh, again, very often means that when you use the word zeh, you're pointing to something, you're referring to something specific. And that something specific, says the Medrash, was this they shall give, like this they shall give. HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe a half shekel in a fiery form. So he showed Moshe the half shekel in a fiery form, and that's the zeh. That's the this. That's, so to speak, the specific thing that is being pointed to say, this, like this, is what they should give. And they're like, and what did Moshe see that God pointed to? That God pointed out this fiery half shekel. Now, there is another place that we find that Hashem showed Moshe something in a fiery form. And that was the menorah. When Hashem was telling Moshe to construct the menorah, and he was describing it to Moshe, so the Medrash brings down that Moshe had a hard time comprehending what God was telling to him. And therefore, God showed it to him, showed him the form of the menorah. He showed him what the menorah is supposed to look like in a fiery form. So, this vision was a vision of a fiery menorah, but it had all the components of the menorah for Moshe to see, to understand what God was directing him to do. Well, if so, if we find previously that Hashem showed Moshe a fiery menorah because Moshe had difficulty comprehending what the menorah should look like, well, if we follow that pattern, that would mean that Moshe had some kind of difficulty with this half shekel, and that God had to show it to him in a fiery form. And the commentaries ask, what's so hard to figure out what a half shekel looks like? I mean, clearly this was a coin that they had. It's a weight, right? It's a weight. So what's the big deal? What was Moshe bothered by that Hashem needed to show him a coin in a fiery form? And the answers that I'm going to share with you actually are based on the idea that Hashem didn't show Moshe a fiery coin for the same reason that he showed Moshe a fiery menorah. Not connected. The fiery menorah Hashem showed him because the Medrash says he couldn't comprehend what it should look like. That's not the issue here by the half shekel. But rather, the fact that Hashem shows Moshe a fiery coin is meant to be a message. There's a message that lies here in the fact that Hashem showed him this fiery coin. So the commentary of Eitz Yosef here on the Medrash Tanchuma explains like this. He explains it's the Anaf Yosef. Okay. Yesh Loimar, LaKadosh Baruch Hu Heraloi Matbea Shel Eish Loimar. Hashem showed Moshe a fiery coin to say, "Kashem shebe'esh ein chiluk ben rab l'maat." When it comes to a fire, there's really, in many ways, there's no difference between a big fire and a small fire. The ma'at esh, because even if you start off with a small fire, mispashet ain't safe. It could spread and become a big fire. You don't have to start with a big fire to have a big fire. You can start with a small fire and fire spreads. So to hear. The ma'at sheyitnu, the little bit that they're going to give, yala lamala, it'll go up, meaning it'll go up. What they did will go up to Shemaim, go up to heaven, and there it'll increase a lot. Meaning, although they're just being told to give a small amount, and it's like, you know, this small amount, you know, what's it worth? You know, it's so meager, it's so little. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu's message to the Jewish people by showing Moshe, a fiery coin is I don't think that just because you're giving a small amount, that it's only going to count a small amount. On the contrary, the small amount that you give, its merit above is going to increase. You start with something small, but it gets big. It starts with something small down here, but above that, but upstairs in Shemayim in heaven, that's where it gets much bigger, increases, and it's very valuable.
Like the mitzvah.
Right. So that is that. That's the Anaf Yosef's explanation to what is the message of the fiery coin. On a similar note, we could say that the message, that a similar message of what the fiery note is meant to do, and that is that, again, you start off with a small fire, okay? A small fire can spread, okay? When you give a small donation, right, don't look at it as just a small donation, because that small donation could also spread. It has its effects. A small donation could have big effects. And even if you give a little bit, but that little bit has big effects, that is all to your credit starting from your small donation. You start with a small fire and the small fire spreads. You can start with a small donation, but it also spreads because it can have effects, could have large effects. And all those effects are credited to you. So for instance, you give a person a couple of bucks, and because he has a couple of bucks, he can buy himself a new pair of pants. Now that he has a decent pair of pants, he can go for an interview. He goes for the interview, he gets a job. And he gets a job, now he can support himself, etc., etc., right? You only gave him a few bucks for a pair of pants. But the effects of those few bucks grew and grew. All that is going to be part of your giving. You may be starting with a small amount. That's a similar idea to Naf Yosef. But just taking it a little bit of a different direction. You're starting with a small donation. Don't just think your small donation, this is a general message about a donation. Don't just think the small donation, you just get credit for that donation itself. You know, you gave 10 bucks, you get a 10 buck reward. If from those 10 bucks, it spreads, the effects of those 10 bucks spreads, like a little fire spreads to a bigger fire, you will get credit for everything that comes from that, even from that small donation. Because that's the potential of a small donation. The potential of a small donation is it can grow. And if it does grow, like a fire grows, you get the credit for all of that. Okay. Another explanation that's given, and again, these are all explanations given in the sense of a general message of giving tzedakah, of giving away one's money for a mitzvah, and that is that very often we don't find it so easy to give away our money. It's not so easy to do. And the reason it's not so easy to do is because we look at it as, well, if I give away my money, then I don't have it. I've lost it. So the message that Hashem gave to Moshe was, look at this fiery coin. If you give somebody a fire, right? You share your fire with somebody, right? That person also has fire. Did your fire get less? Doesn't get less. So too, when you give from your money for a mitzvah, for tzedakah, in this case, for giving towards the Mishkan, when you give money for that, there's no loss for you for that. You don't lose out from it. Even if at the end of the day you've now given up your money, you don't lose from it. That was the message of the fire. The fire required as a message, just like when you give from your fire, it doesn't decrease your fire. When you give from your money for a mitzvah, for tzedakah, it doesn't make a decrease, it doesn't make a loss by you. Okay, another explanation of the fiery coin is the idea of zrizus. Meaning, very often, fire is used as an analogy to doing something with enthusiasm, right? A fire it represents excitement. It represents activity, life, energy. So very often, and when we talk about, very often there's a phrase we use to do something with hislahavas. Lahav means a flame. Do it with enthusiasm, with energy. In Yiddish we say, with a bren. So the idea of the fiery coin was that, again, it's not so easy to give away your money. The main thing that Hashem wants to see when you're giving your money, when you're giving away the money, that you're doing it with a bren. You're doing it with enthusiasm, you're doing it with energy, you're doing it with excitement, because you understand how important it is to do a mitzvah. And therefore, although it's going to be hard for you to give up your money, what Hashem wants to see when you give up that money, what Hashem really wants to see in that donation, is the excitement and enthusiasm that's involved in giving it. That's what Hashem wants to see. That's the main thing that He wants to see. And that, again, that was the message of that fiery coin. The message of the fiery coin is that what really matters to Hashem is not so much the money that you're giving, but how much heart you have in it, how much enthusiasm you have in it, how much energy you have in it. Yeah, it's difficult to do, but the main thing that Hashem wants to see is not so much the amount, but how much you want to give, how much enjoyment you have from giving, how much enthusiasm you have for giving. And the truth is that whenever we talk about doing a mitzvah in general, we're supposed to do a mitzvah with zerizus, with excitement, with enthusiasm, with energy. Everybody's supposed to be that way. Here, by tzedakah, again, of course, we're talking about giving up one's money, which is a difficult thing to do. Here, again, there's a stress to make. Hashem wants to see the enthusiasm. He wants to see that you want to do this. He wants to see your excitement in doing this, as difficult as it may be. But again, every mitzvah should be done with zrizus, with excitement, with zest, with zeal, because that's the true sign of how much we want to do it. So I mentioned this story before, that there was a famous Hasidic Rebbe known as Reb Chaim Tzanzer. And his custom was that every month he would test all the cheder children. All the children who went to yeshiva, to cheder, they would come and be tested by him. They'd repeat, they'd repeat over the Gemara that they studied, the Mishnah that they studied. They would say it bal peh, they would say it by heart. And he would reward them with coins, with candies. This was the custom that he did for the children of the city. So there were a group of non-observant Jews in the city who decided to play a trick. They decided to have a good time. Yeah. So what did they do? They took a non-Jewish child and they dressed him up like a Jewish, like a Hasidic child, and they taught him a page of Gemara. He was a bright kid, right? And he caught on. And they taught him the page of the Gemara till he knew it perfectly. All right, came Rosh Chodesh, and all the children are there, lining up to be tested. And they noticed this other kid that just doesn't look familiar. They've never seen him in school. Now, they don't know who he is exactly. All right. Then what happens is, when it's his time to come, he bangs out the Gemara by heart, perfect, flawless. And everybody's saying, who is this kid? Who is this kid? Reb Chaim Tzanzer looks at the kid and he says, go tell your father there's a better way to make a few bucks. He caught on who the kid went. The kid wasn't for real. And that he was here to get some coins as a reward.
Yeah. Didn't you tell us a story?
Yeah, I did. I told you that.
Yeah.
So he sent away the kid. So when the pranksters found out about it, they were very impressed at the end of the day that he caught on. So it's very interesting how in these stories, right, all these people who do these kinds of disrespectful things, they'll still go back to him and say, how'd you figure it out? So that's what they did. They went back and they asked him, how'd you figure it out? He said, it was very simple. When a Jewish child learns Torah, and he learns it, and he says it over with excitement, with warmth, with spirituality. He shuckles, he sways, he's into it. There's an energy there, there's an excitement there. There's an enjoyment there. And this kid, he was just getting up there and rattling off the Gemara. That's how I knew he wasn't one of ours. The point being that the way that we try to teach our children Torah is not just to stick a bunch of facts in their head, but rather we want them to enjoy learning Torah. We want them to study Torah with enjoyment, with excitement, which is something that we hope will carry over into their adulthood. But he understood that that the way we teach our children, the way we give them knowledge, is a way that it's not just something. It's not just something that's, we're not just sticking facts into their head. Rather, we're trying to we're instilling in them the love and the excitement and the energy and the warmth that comes with studying Torah, and which is important for studying Torah, which is important for all mitzvahs, and especially it was this by this mitzvah that was being brought out because of the difficulty that's involved in parting with our money. The fiery coin was, Hashem wants to see the fire, the excitement, and the energy in giving away your money for a mitzvah. One last explanation about this I want to share with you, and that is that the message, again, it's a general message about money, and that money is fire, which means fire can be constructive and productive, fire can be dangerous, okay? With fire, you heat up water, and you cook food. Fire can be warmed, but fire, if it gets out of hand, can be very dangerous and very damaging. And the message of the fiery coin that Moshe was to deliver to the Jewish people was that, remember that the money, you're giving away your money for a mitzvah. That's giving away, that's the positive fire aspect of money. But always remember, money is like fire. It can be productive if you use it right, and it can be destructive if you use it wrong. And not long ago, during on our Shabbos year, I mentioned a very interesting article that I read. And the article was about how people, again, this is from the experience of Jewish families, of how they dealt with becoming suddenly rich. How did they deal with, all of a sudden a bunch of money falling into them? How did they deal with it? So the article talks about one family where, for whatever reason, I don't know if it was a business that they went into, they made a lot of money, and it became well known that they made a lot of money, and the people coming for tzedakah at the door didn't stop. It was nonstop. So they wanted to do the mitzvah, but again, there is a limit of how much you can do. They basically have to set up hours about when they would receive people, when they wouldn't receive people. You have the people who spoke about the fact that when they became wealthy, they weren't always wealthy, and they didn't forget who they were, where they came from, and they weren't looking to forget their friends, their family. Sometimes the family and the friends were a little bit weary, okay, what are they going to be like now? And they always had to try to reassure them that they're not going to be any different, and they're going to be helpful. One woman talks about how, we just celebrated Purim. And in many cities, Purim is a very big tzedakah collecting day. And there are people, especially for people who have the money and are known to give tzedakah, there are people who line up and they come to the house and they put on a little Purim shtick or something. And so to speak, for the performance, right, you get some tzedakah. Okay, so this woman was, I don't know why she was doing it, her husband wasn't there, maybe just, he didn't want to bother with it, I don't know. But we was talking about that she was there and her friends were there, and she was busy, dealing with all the people coming to collect tzedakah and writing checks, and she was ignoring her friends. And she realized that she had to catch herself. She had to catch herself that she was ignoring her friends. So she created some other kind of system. Then you had the people that unfortunately came into a lot of money, and became completely different people. They actually became the kind of people who didn't want to have anything to do anymore with the older people. Now, they're wealthy, they only deal with certain types of people, they don't go for yontif at home anymore, now they got to go to the hotel, together with other types of, with other people. I'm not necessarily thinking it's wrong to go to the hotel, but I'm just saying the point is that they became the kind of people who would only do that. They're not interested in the family anymore. Right now, they have to go out to the hotel and hang out with a certain type of type of person. You have the people who actually, when they become wealthy, because they become wealthy, they actually become very involved in communal activity. And sometimes they get so involved and busy with communal activity that they start to neglect their family. That's again something you got to know how to deal with. And then, from another angle, these people, what happens to people when they had money and they lost it? What happens to them then? The person who defines themselves by their wealth, if they lose the money, chas v'shalom, they're in big trouble. and they continue trying to keep the business going because they can't admit that it's done, and they put in more money, and they lose more money, and they lose more money, until somebody in the family has to put a final stop to it. These are the these are the effects of money. Money is like fire. It could have a positive effect, it could have a negative effect. And these positive and negative effects can manifest themselves in many different ways. But a person has to be aware and careful about what the power of money is. It can be positive, it can be constructive, or it can be destructive. Okay. Now, a big part of this week's parsha is dedicated to the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. And the sin of the golden calf there, which is this week's parsha. Another thing that we read this week is Parshas Parah. One of the special readings of the Maftir this week is Parshas Parah. Parah refers to Parshas Chukas, which deals with the mitzvah of Parah Aduma. You take a red cow, you burn the red cow, you mix its ashes with spring water, and then anybody who now becomes tame, ritually impure, through a dead body, to become pure, have to be sprinkled with this Parah Aduma, with the red cow water. And our sages say that Parah Aduma, that mitzvah, and the sin of the golden calf are related. And the mitzvah Parah Aduma, in some ways, is meant to atone for the sin of the golden calf. And the Chachamim use an analogy. They say, you know, let the mother come and clean up her child's mess. Right? So you've got the parah, you've got the red cow, cleaning up the mess of the ego of the calf. So the question is, what's the connection? How does Parah Aduma atone for the sin of the golden calf? Now, another thing is, I guess this maybe can be open for discussion, but the mitzvah Parah Aduma didn't come until later. Okay? And, okay, it came later, but it was a mitzvah that lasted for many generations, and we should assume that the mitzvah for all generations is meant to be an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. But the sin of the golden calf was done by one generation, not by every generation. So when you were later generations fulfill the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, how are they making up for what the earlier generations did? Can you do that? Does it work like that? Well, to some degree it does. You know, we talk about that every mitzvah creates a certain spiritual blemish in the world, and that spiritual blemish can be rectified and should be rectified through generations, through future generations that can rectify it. Another idea is that any sin, especially a sin like with the ramifications of the golden calf, is a blemish in those who committed it. And it's a blemish, a spiritual blemish, they pass on for all generations. And therefore, we all can rectify that original sin because there is that spiritual blemish that became part of those who did it and it was carried on and it was passed on for later generations. So even if we're not the ones who did the sin of the golden calf, there's still a possibility for us to rectify it. But we still have to make the connection. What kind of connection is there between the mitzvah Parah Aduma and the sin of the golden calf? And this explanation is going to really be an explanation looking at it from a certain angle, from a certain dimension. It's an atonement that the Parah Aduma does for one aspect of what took place at the sin of the golden calf. And according to this explanation, it's going to mean actually that this kind of rectification we're talking about actually took place later on. It was rectification that wasn't there right away. It was something that would develop in the mitzvah Parah Aduma later on. I'll explain it to you this in the following way. So the Mishnayos in Maseches Parah, which we learned a while ago, say the following. The Torah says that the person who burns the Parah Aduma, burns the red cow, gathers its ashes, draws the water, mixes the water, that person has to be Ish Tahar. It has to be a person who is pure, ritually pure. Okay. Now, when a person becomes impure, okay, let's keep it in a sense, a person came into contact with a sheretz, with a dead rodent, which makes you tummy, okay? So, you come into contact with it, you can go to the mikveh that day, and once you've gone to the mikveh, you're called a tful yom. It means you have immersed that day. there's a certain level of impurity that is now removed from you. It actually allows you to eat Meiser. But if, let's say, you're a Kohen, you want to eat Truma, or you want to eat from a carbon, you have to wait for the next day. You have to wait for what's called Harib Shemesh. The sun has to set. The day has to end. Once the day ends, then you can now partake of even Truma. Then you become completely pure, again, depending on the situation and what for. Sometimes you need a sacrifice to become completely pure. But certain things, all you need is, you need to go to the mikveh for sure. And then if you want to eat Truma, you'll have to wait for the day to end, and then you can eat Truma, like the very first Mishnah Brachas talks about. But if you go to the mikveh that day, before the day is over, you're called a Tful Yom. You've gone to the mikveh that day, and a certain level of impurity is off. Okay? Now, the Torah says, Ishtar. The Torah says, if you're involved in the Paraduma, you have to be Tahar. Okay? What does Tahar mean? Is it enough for you to have just gone to the mikveh that day? Or do you have to be really Tahar? Meaning you got to wait for the next day. So, we have a tradition in Tara Shabbal Peh, the oral law teaches us that even though Tahar would have meant completely Tahar, the oral law, the Mishnah teaches us, it doesn't have to be the way for Paraduma. As much as Paraduma is very strict in many aspects to its being created in purity, still, the halacha is, and again, we don't know this from the Chumash, we know this from Tara Shabbal Peh, from the oral law, that the level of tar for anybody involved in the Paraduma from the burning on, it's enough if he went to the mikveh that day, even if it's not the next day. Okay. But as we know, that there were a group of people who did not believe in the Torah Shabbal Peh, the oral law. They were called the Tzedukim, the Sadducees. And they were very powerful, and they made a lot of trouble, and many of them penetrated the even the Kohanim Gedolim, the high priests, some of them were Tzedukim. And they said, no, that's not enough. You can't just go ahead and go to the mikveh. That's not enough. We don't believe in that Torah Shabbat Pes stuff. We don't believe in the oral law. We don't believe in that. So, according to them, you want to go ahead and make the Paraduma? You want to burn it? You want to gather the ashes? Draw the water? Mix ashes in the water? You have to be completely tar. You have to wait till the next day to be able to do it. And practically speaking, if you're talking about the burning of the Paraduma, you can't do it at night. It has to be done by day. Which would mean, if you became impure, you'd have to go to the mikveh, and then you'd have to wait till the next day to go ahead and burn the Paraduma. That's what they said. So Paraduma had this conflict. It had this conflict between we who believe in the Torah Shabbal Peh and Tzedukim who didn't. The Tzedukim were saying, the oral law, that's based on what the Chachamim say, we don't believe in that. The sages said it, so what the sages said it. It's got to come, we only believe in the written law that came from Moshe. We don't believe what the sages say. So in Paraduma, and what happened by Paraduma was like this. To battle and to show that Tzedukim were wrong, they would intentionally make the Kohen impure. The Kohen is going to burn the Paraduma, is going to burn the red cow. They intentionally made him impure. How so? Give him a nice slap on the back. How you doing? And that was enough. Because basically, for Paraduma, in order for you to be pure for Paraduma, it has to be 100%. We have to know 100% that you're pure. You basically have to purify yourself for the purposes of Paraduma to be pure for the Paraduma. If you haven't done that, you're not pure for Paraduma. So any regular person who's just, even if he hasn't come into contact with anything tamei, but again, he hasn't been purified for Paraduma purposes, is considered impure for Paraduma. And if he touches a person who wants to do the Paraduma, that person now has to go to the mikveh. So therefore, what they intentionally would do, what the sage would intentionally do was, they would go over to the Kohen, who is going to be the one to burn the Paraduma, give him a little pat on the back, and then, all right, go into the mikveh. But now, yeah, once you came out of the mikveh, go ahead and do what you, now you can go do the process. Go ahead and process the Paraduma. Go burn it. So they intentionally did something to strengthen Torah Shabbat Peh, the oral law, to strengthen the idea of believing in the sages. They intentionally did that. And therefore, because of that aspect of Paraduma, The Parah Aduma was, there was an aspect of Parah Aduma that was done to strengthen the belief in the sages, in the words of the sages, that now atones for a dimension of the sin of the golden calf. There was a dimension of the sin of the golden calf that came from a lack of believing and trusting the sages. The sin of the golden calf took place when Moshe went up to Har Sinai to get the Torah. Moshe says to the Jewish people, if you have any issues, you go to Aaron and Hur. Aaron was Moshe's brother, as we know. Hur was Moshe's nephew. You go to them. They're in charge now. All right. So the Medrash tells us, the Jewish people got this idea of the golden calf. They went to Aaron and Hur and they said, we want to do this. Go make for us a god. Hur says, no chance. So what do they do to Hur? They killed him. They killed him. Which means that clearly they were not believing, they didn't believe or trust the words of the sages. Moshe said, he is in charge. He is now the sage, he is the leader. And they displayed this terrible lack of trust and belief in that leader, because when he didn't want to do what they did, what they wanted, they killed him. So therefore, now, Parah Aduma, when we go out of our way to show that we believe in the words of the Chachamim, that now rectifies that aspect of the sin of the golden calf, where the Jewish people displayed a lack of trusting the words of the sages. That's an explanation that was given by Harav Avigdor Nevenzahl. He's the Rav of the Old City of Jerusalem now. Now, in this discussion about Parah Aduma, I just want to share with you a very interesting Tosefta. It's an interesting story. If you want to know how far it went, an illustration of this conflict. So the Tosefta, which is from the same sages of the Mishnah, Tosefta says the following story. There was a Kohen who he was bearing the Parah Aduma, and he was perhaps a closet Siddiqui, but he wanted to work it out that he can burn the Parah Aduma not as a person who went to the mikveh that day, but rather do it the next day. So what did he do? So he came to burn the Parah Aduma. The Chachamim gave him a slap on the back. He went to the mikveh. He got very busy with something. So by the time it came to burn the Parah Aduma, the sun had gone down. Oh well, too late. And you can't do it now because you can't burn the Parah Aduma by night. So you have to wait till the next day. He said, okay, we'll do it tomorrow. Worked perfect. Perfect plan to do it the way he wants to. So the Tosefta says that the sage Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he knew what this guy was doing. He saw through him. So the next day, the Kohen is going to go in the burn of the Parah Aduma. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes from it and says, we're so happy that you're here. Now go to the mikveh. So you have to go to the mikveh. Then when he came out of the mikveh, the Tosefta says he did something to his ear to give him a yank in the ear. Either that people there's two explanations. One explanation, I'm not sure what this means, either to show that this guy went to the mikveh, like he did what he was supposed to do, or actually it was meant to really get him. By yanking his ear, he made him a baal mum, he blemished him. Now that he was blemished, he couldn't even do it. So when this, so after this all happened, that Kohen said, "Rechon ben Zakkai, lichsha efne, when I have a chance, .. when I have a chance, you're in trouble." Rechon ben Zakkai said to him, "Lichsha tifne, yeah, when you have a chance." A couple of days later, that Kohen was dead. So this Tosefta illustrates, where this went. This was an illustration of that argument, of that dispute, of that conflict. It was a conflict that stretched into other things, but this paradum, this example of the conflict between the Prushim and Sadukim, the sage and the Sadukim, this was really an argument about how to, I shouldn't say it was the only one, but it was an argument how to do it, and it was where the Chachamim said, we're going to intentionally make sure it's done this way to show people that this is the right way to do it. And that act of strengthening the oral law, the Torah Shebaal Peh, which is founded on our belief and trust of the sages, that atoned for that aspect of belief in our sages that was lacking by the sin of the golden calf. Okay. Have a wonderful Shabbos.